My God, why have you forsaken me? Why are you so far from helping me and from the words of my groaning?
David writes here in Psalm 22 about feeling alone, feeling abandoned during times of trial. All of us certainly experience various trials, and frequently we feel perhaps that maybe we have been abandoned, or at least maybe God isn't listening to us. We don't know. We're feeling alone, concerned. And while we wait for those big miracles to bring us from our trials, do we miss the small ones that are in our lives? Today, what I want to do is encourage all of us to seek out those small miracles that God uses in our lives, that He uses to show us that He will indeed see us through. Now, sometimes you might wonder, is it a small miracle that's taking place or just time and chance? Have you experienced small miracles in your life? There was a time in mine, even before I had been called into the church, but obviously God knew what His plans were. I was coming back to visit my parents. I was in college at the time. And it was late at night. I was on a divided highway. And I look up ahead, maybe about half a mile or so, and I see some taillights. They're sitting on the side of the road. Now, you know, I remember my driver's training that, okay, you see someone on the side of the road and you have room, you probably should get over in the left-hand lane because it was a divided highway, just for safety's sake. But I still had plenty of time to do that. I could have probably gone another 300, 400, 500 yards before it would have been an issue. But I, for some reason, at that time, chose to go ahead and move over into the left lane right then and there. I'm over in the left lane, and all of a sudden, within 100 yards of when I had moved over into the left lane, there, in the center of the right-hand lane, was a semi-truck tire that had fallen off. Now, at the time, I drove a Ford Fiesta. It's one of those kind of cars where when you fold it up twice, you can put it in your pocket. You don't have to worry about parking. If I had hit that tire in that car at 55 miles per hour, I wouldn't, in most likelihood, be here telling you about it now. So was it time and chance? Looking back on it, I don't think it was. I think it was God intervening in my life, because it obviously had a very significant effect on my life. So it was a small miracle. I didn't think much about it at the time other than, wow, you know, I just missed this huge accident. But it's something that now, looking back, I can see. It was a small miracle that God had done. Little thing, insignificant it seems, but it was there. And I think each of us, as we look back in our lives, can reflect on that and see those little small miracles. But let's look at one as an example that's from the Bible. Turn with me to the book of Joshua and chapter 6. Now, this is a story that all of us are very familiar with, but perhaps we haven't looked at it from this perspective yet. Joshua chapter 6. I'm going to start in verse 20. Joshua 6, 20 through 25. Now, you all know the story. The Israelites have been marching around the walls of Jericho. And on the seventh day, the last time around, starting here in verse 20, so the people shouted when the priest blew the trumpets. And it happened that when the people heard the sound of the trumpet, and the people shouted with a great shout, that the wall fell down flat. Then the people went up into the city, every man straight before him, and took the city. And they utterly destroyed all that was in the city, both man and woman, young and old, ox and sheep and donkey, with the edge of the sword. But Joshua had said to the two men who had spied out the country, go into the harlot's house, and from there bring out the woman and all that she has, as you swore to her. And the young men who had been the spies went in and brought out Rahab, her father, her mother, her brothers, and all that she had. So they brought out all her relatives and left them outside the camp of Israel. But they burned the city and all that was in it with fire, And only the silver and gold and the vessels of bronze and iron they put into the treasury of the house of the Lord. And Joshua spared Rahab the harlot, her father's household, and all that she had. So she dwells in Israel to this day, because she hid the messengers whom Joshua sent to spy out Jericho. Now, obviously with the falling down of the walls, that's not the small miracle that we're talking about here. What I want to do today is take a look at this event from Rahab's perspective. Is she going through a trial here? She's going through a huge trial. Number one, her way of life, everything that she has known, is about to be completely destroyed. And she knows it. So there's that pending, that doom hanging over the entire city, and they know it. But secondly, on a more personal level, is that she's under suspicion. The leaders of the city knew that she was in contact with the Israelites. Let's turn back to Joshua in the second chapter. Joshua 2, 1 through 4. Let's take a look at this. Now Joshua, the son of Nun, sent out two men from Acacia Grove to spy secretly, saying, "Go, view the land, especially Jericho." So they went and came to the house of a harlot named Rahab and lodged there. And it was told the king of Jericho, saying, "Behold, men have come here tonight from the children of Israel to search out the country." So the king of Jericho sent to Rahab, saying, "Bring out the men who have come to you, who have entered your house, for they have come to search out all the country." Then the woman took the two men and hid them. So she said, "Yes, the men came to me, but I did not know where they were from." So the city officials already knew that she had contact, and obviously her neighbors knew about this. Somebody reported her. And the second thing, which leads to some suspicion and might endanger her from within the city, is the fact that she had all of her relatives coming and staying at her place. Her father, her mother, her siblings and their families and stuff like that. This was unusual. And they were there for a number of days and staying there. So that indeed, that would probably increase the suspicion and increase the danger to her that someone's going to say, "What is going on here? Why? How are you involved?" And then to add more anguish to this, here come the Israelites. Ah, finally, they're coming. They're going to take over the city, and they're going to rescue me. They march around the city, and then they leave. What's going on here? Second day they come, they march around the city, and they leave. So here she is, she's under suspicion, she's got her family with her. What's she going to do? Because they keep coming and they keep going. They're not taking over the city. She obviously doesn't know the plan. She doesn't know what God had told Joshua. So her anguish is probably building. She's in this trial, not knowing what is going to happen to her. What is she going to do? Well, first thing she had to do is she had to have faith in the promise that God gave her. Look at verses 12 through 14 in Joshua 2. Joshua 2, 12 to 14. "Now therefore I beg you, swear to me by the Lord, since I have shown you kindness, that you also will show kindness to my father's house, and give me a true token, and spare my father, my mother, my brothers, my sisters, and all that they have, and deliver our lives from death." So the men answered her, "Our lives for yours, if none of you tell this business of ours. And it shall be, when the Lord has given us the land, that we will deal kindly and truly with you." So through the spies who were representing Joshua, who was representing God, she had a promise from God, and she had to have faith that he was going to uphold this promise. Now that applies to us today too. God has made a promise to us. If you want to, keep your place here in Joshua, because we will be back and we will be marching around Joshua ourselves for a number of times. But turn to Hebrews. In Hebrews chapter 13, Paul writes here in verses 5 through 6. Hebrews 13, verses 5 through 6. "Let your conduct be without covetousness. Be content with such things as you have, for he himself has said, I will never leave you nor forsake you. So we may boldly say, the Lord is my helper. I will not fear. What can man do to me? Now, what's interesting here, Paul quotes, I will never leave you nor forsake you. That is actually present in two different spots in the Old Testament from where he's quoting. One is in Deuteronomy 31, verses 6 to 8. Now, what's interesting about this spot is that God is making that promise to the nation of Israel. And in the same way today, God has promised us as a church that he will not leave us and he will not forsake us. So we have that promise as a church. But in addition to that, the other place where this is present is in Joshua chapter 1, verse 5. God is making that promise to Joshua specifically. And in the same way, we personally, one-to-one with God, he has made that promise to each one of us. So we indeed, when we're going through trials and difficulties which seem like they're never going to end, we have to have faith that God has made this promise to us. He is not going to forsake us, both individually and as a church. Well, let's go back to Joshua again. The other thing Rahab had to do, which we also need to keep in mind for ourselves today, is that Rahab had to follow God's instructions. She had to have faith, and she had to follow God's instructions. Let's take a look at that in Joshua 2, and verses 17 through 21. So the man said to her, we will be blameless of this oath of yours, which you have made us swear, unless when we come into the land, you bind this line of scarlet cord in the window through which you've let us down. And unless you bring your father, your mother, your brothers, and all your father's household to your own home. So it shall be that whoever goes outside the doors of your house into the street, his blood shall be on his own head, and we will be guiltless. And whoever is with you in the house, his blood shall be on our head if a hand is laid on him. And if you tell this business of ours, then we will be free from your oath, which you made us swear. And then she said, according to your words, so be it. And she sent them away, and they departed. And she bound the scarlet cord in the window. She had to follow the instructions. Likewise with us today, God has given us instructions on how to live our lives. We need to follow those instructions and to heed them. I also want to notice here that she didn't wait put that scarlet cord outside her window. She did that right away, even though she had told the men to go hide for 3 days before they went back to the camp of Israel. She knew there was going to be some delay. She didn't wait. She started following those instructions right away. It wasn't, well, okay, I have a few days here. No, right away she implemented those instructions. So what was the small miracle that she experienced in her life? Let's look at verse 15 in chapter 2 here of Joshua. Then she let them down by a rope through the window, for her house was on the city wall. She dwelt on the wall. You see that? Where was her house? It was on the wall of Jericho. So when the Israelites had marched around that seventh time, the trumpets were blown, and the people shouted, and the wall came tumbling down. It all did, except for one spot, where her house was. It's a small miracle from the perspective of the overall events. You don't stop and think about it. It doesn't say here in a parenthetical remark, oh, and by the way, Rahab's house was left standing because it was this part of the wall didn't come down. But God kept his promise. The entire rest of the wall was destroyed. The city was destroyed, the people were put to death, but Rahab was delivered because God had made that promise. She had faith in that promise. She followed his instructions, and she was delivered from that destruction. So in the midst of that destruction, she kept her faith that God would be true to his promise. She followed his instructions. So when that wall came down, her house remained standing, and she was delivered. My God, why have you forsaken me? Why are you so far from helping me and from the words of my groaning? What's interesting is that when Jesus Christ was going through an excruciating trial, one that none of us will ever have to endure, he quoted the first part of this psalm, but not because he felt abandoned, not because he felt God no longer heard him. Let's turn back to Psalm 22. Because in spite of the way this psalm starts, as you follow it through and you see the anguish that David is writing about, let's see how he finishes it up. Psalm 22, verses 19 through 24. But you, O Lord, do not be far from me. O my strength, hasten to help me. Deliver me from the sword, my precious life from the power of the dog. Save me from the lion's mouth and from the horns of the wild oxen. You have answered me. Does this sound like someone who's convinced that God has abandoned him? No. He knows that God is there. You have answered me. I will declare your name to my brethren. In the midst of the assembly, I will praise you. You who fear the Lord, praise him. All you descendants of Jacob, glorify him and fear him, all you offspring of Israel. For he has not despised nor abhorred the affliction of the afflicted, nor has he hidden his face from him. But when he cried to him, he heard. When it seems like the walls are just crashing around us, and that our trials will never end, or that they're so severe that we think, I cannot take this anymore, remember, God is near, and he does hear us. And although it may seem like God has forsaken us, he has not. Indeed, he cannot forsake us, because he's promised us that he would not. He's promised that he would never forsake us or leave us. And even if we forget that, God will not. So next time you find you need some encouragement, some strength to go on through your trial, remember the small miracles. Through them, we can be comforted in knowing that God is still involved in our lives and watching over us.